No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIO and the number 1. We're excited to have a guest with us tonight, and Maria is going to introduce her in a second. I want to wish everybody out there a happy Hanukkah. Tonight's the sixth night of Hanukkah. So with that, Maria,
introduce
our guest. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator. And I'm really pleased to have Dr. Bonnie Eaker Weil as our guest. She's been on Good Morning America, The Huffington Post, The Oprah Show, Today, The View, amongst others. She's written books, Makeup, Don't Break Up, and Adultery, The Forgivable Sin is how we first met one another professionally. So, Dr. Bonnie, thank you so much for being with us. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about Season's cheatings. And you say sex has no calories, but sugar brings out cheating, and most affairs start at holiday parties. So with Hanukkah in full swing and Christmas around the corner, your topic couldn't be more timely. So welcome to Shadow Politics.
Thank you, Maria. It's nice to work with you again.
Thank you.
Yes, there's a rise in affairs, Christmas and Hanukkah, which we're having right now, and also up to New Year's. Mistletoe, cocktail parties, office parties, where most of the affairs start. And people have high expectations, Maria, for having fun around this time of year. And, you know, it's not a lot of fun for a lot of people because a lot of people are already into their emptiness. They have job stress. They have family stress. They have economic stress. So the emotions are high, if that makes sense. And then the libido, because of these low inhibitions with all the drinking, spurs up the sizzle for the wrong person. And people are pigging out on fattening food, and then they're tempted to cheat when the food and the sugar doesn't do it for the thrill-seeking anymore. Then they go to fill their emptiness up with another person, kind of like looking for the lost utopia, for your, you know, like love without the responsibilities. It's like having, you know, sugar without the calories. And compensating for the hurt, maybe frustration, unmet needs that they had, you know, in their youth, and they're looking for that high.
So you often mention that that's the predictor. It's not necessarily that they're looking for an affair or they're looking to act out, but it's something biochemical.
Yes, I call it the biochemical craving for connection, because stress, loss, and separation, which are pretty big during the holidays, this brings on a yearning to fill that emptiness. And so then people then kind of feel that they want to get like thrill-seeking. The thrill-seeking, like momentarily, like when you have sugar, it calms you down for that minute, and then you have to keep up the same high. You have to keep going for the same high. Like if you have, say, a donut, you'll have to eat something else like a pie after that. This is the same with this thrill-seeking. And so the people are then, during this time, looking for that self-medicating high that I call the biochemical craving for connection. And we have a cure and treatment. I mean, I could help Charlie Rose and Matt Lauer, you know, and all the other people if they would just understand that you can't just go to a treatment center that's like a country club. I mean, you have to change your whole diet. You have to give up sugar and give up alcohol. You've got to take supplements. There's a specific three or four supplements that we give people that helps them with clarity, with judgment, better judgment, because they don't have good judgment, the people that are doing this. They're kind of having like an OCD moment where they have to pull their pants down or, you know, they have to expose themselves. I mean, I'm not sticking up for these people. I'm just telling you that it's not like they can control themselves. That's why they do these things, spur of the moment. And we have supplements that control the OCD moment. And you probably remember that my father had this problem. And so that's how I learned the cure and treatment, because he struggled for 8 years in regular therapy, you know, without supplements, without changing his diet. He had a candy draw. He was a sugar freak. And he kept saying to the doctor that treated him twice a week in therapy, hey, look, I can't control this. I want to. I don't want to do this. But can you help me? Because there's something in my brain that's making me do these things. And I also know that when I eat sugar, it's actually worse. So this went on for about 25 years of getting the wrong help. And then the next 25 years, when I went to school, my teacher helped him, my mentor. And he stopped cheating for the next 25 years. So there is help for these people. And we need to help them. And we need to see this, Maria, as a disease. Higher, you know, seasons cheating, higher when we're more stressed out and feel more low around the holidays. But we do need to treat this as a disease like alcoholism used to be. So that instead of judging it, we need to fix it. Of all these poor women that have come forward. But the answer isn't just having people come forward. It's fixing the problem. So other men don't do this to women again.
You know, Dr. Bonnie, since you brought up Matt Lauer and Charlie Rose and all these people, I find this very disturbing. And I'm in politics. So what about power? How does power play into this? Because it seems to me that this is what these guys are about, that, you know, it's really not about sex for them. It's about having the power to do whatever the hell they want and feel that there are no repercussions for it. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm glad that you said that, because let me tell you something, and you know very well, since you're in politics, that there is a high incidence of people, presidents in the past, and also politicians that have this issue. I mean, I'm not talking about exposing themselves. I'm just talking about having this temptation, right? And it's very interesting, the question you just asked, because people that are powerful take more risks. The more risks they take, the more powerful they feel. The more powerful they are and feel, the more risks they take. There's a connection. Some of it has to do with vasopressin, which is a hormone that we find in men like this. They have a higher incidence, not testosterone, the vasopressin. So when the vasopressin is very high like that, they have to do something to relieve that anxiety. And it's higher for people that are under stress, loss, and separation. And these powerful people, the reason that they get to be so powerful is that they also are very stressed. I mean, let's look at Matt Lauer for a second. He doesn't get enough rest. Right. I know that for a fact. And if you don't sleep correctly, your brain chemicals aren't working. He's under a lot of stress to stay on top, as was Harvey Weinstein. And again, I'm not sticking up for these people. I'm telling you, they're not on the same schedule that we are. And politicians also. I mean, they take airplanes. They're not always sleeping properly. They're very stressed out. There's a lot of pressure and deadlines on them. So the more prone we are to stress, the more powerful we are, the more risk we take, the more risk we take, the more powerful. So that's how it's connected. But they don't do this just because they're narcissistic. They get to be narcissistic when the brain chemicals are not working, because you need brain chemicals to work correctly to have what we call empathy. And when you have empathy, you're not going to be doing these things that these people are doing to women. So that's the connection between
an interesting point, I think. Excuse me. But I think that's an interesting point. I think a lot of these guys, that's one thing I've noticed, that they do lack empathy. And that's why I think that so many of these incidences have involved young women, even children, you know, because they can't empathize with what they're really doing to these people. They really don't think about anybody but themselves.
But they also use the argument, or I would like to suggest the excuse, that they're sex addicts.
Right.
And how do you put that into perspective with what you're talking about, Dr. Bonnie?
It's a disease. Okay, so I'm not excusing it or, you know, in any way glamorizing it, but it is a disease like alcoholism. And remember how alcoholism used to be where we judged it and we made people feel that there was something wrong with them and they had no character? It's the same thing here, because there's no judgment if the brain chemicals are off, which the blood sugar. Now, blood sugar fluctuations do it also. Blood sugar fluctuations come from stress, loss, and separation, which we see with politicians, we see with the Hollywood TV people. They don't have the same judgment, and especially if they're not sleeping and eating right. Now, we did studies, and I've done studies on my patients. The ones that stopped sugar and changed their blood sugar fluctuations so they became more even, they began to have more clarity in their thinking and judgment along with the supplements that we gave. And when they have clarity in their judgment, and you're not going to believe this, it's incredible, they start to empathize. I had one guy who was drinking a lot. He was one of the, I would say, the meanest guy I think I've ever worked with. And he was nasty and he was mean to his wife. He was also nasty to me. One time I had a coughing fit. I had a respiratory infection, you know, and I was on the phone with him and I started to cough and he hung up the phone and he started to chew me out when I got back on the phone. He had no empathy for the fact that, you know, I had to hang up because I was coughing. And so I said to him, stop the alcohol because your wife is going to leave you because you're really not a nice person. So he stopped the alcohol for 1 year because he didn't want to lose his marriage. The guy was so empathetic. I was working with an MD who couldn't believe it either. I said, look at the difference. He's empathetic. He was caring towards me as a therapist, towards his wife. He was a different person. And then one day the anniversary came of their anniversary. He took some champagne, and it was all over after that. He changed back to the same person again, kept committing adultery over and over, and was nasty and mean. So I have seen what can happen if they start to get on a different diet where the blood sugar is balanced and they have supplements for the OCD and also for the judgment. This is why this sex addiction can be fixed, but it can't be fixed by just having psychotherapy. Impossible, like my father proved.
Well, you know, Bonnie, Dr. Bonnie, let me ask you, because let's be clear about this, because it can't just be sugar. I'm a diabetic. I've always got high blood sugar, unless I'm control. It's in control these days, but very often I have high blood sugar. I've never cheated on my wife. You know, so what else is going on here?
Everybody. I mean, look, it's just like some people can drink and nothing happens. It's your blood. It depends on the blood sugar fluctuations. In other words, if your blood sugar is not balanced, people, not everybody, but people that we're talking about, will act out inappropriately. The behavior is bizarre because the brain chemicals are not normal. I mean, if you have poor judgment, something's wrong with your brain chemicals and your blood sugar at the same, you know, they feed off each other. Okay. And then the vasopressin for some of these people that I mentioned, they start to look for thrill seeking, to self-medicate, to calm down this vasopressin. So that's what goes on. And the more powerful they feel, the more risk they take. The more risk they take, the more powerful they feel. I mean, Spitzer was a good example, you know, our governor of New York. I mean, in other words, doing things like Clinton did in the Oval Office, the more thrill-seeking, the better for these people. You know, that's why everybody thinks, oh, well, we fired all these people. This is going to help. It's not going to really help in the sense that because they look for thrill-seeking. So that's why they do these things that you and I wouldn't do, because that part of the brain, that's the frontal cortex, that deals with dangerous situations. The average person does not want to do something dangerous. If your frontal cortex is off, you're going to do things that, you know, dangerous people would do, like, you know, jumping out of an airplane and things like that. But we're worried about these people because this is inappropriate, bizarre behavior that's affecting and hurting other people for generations. You know, not just those people. But that's why I am working towards seeing this as a disease. And I thought maybe now we would see this as a disease and do something about it. But everybody's so busy looking at all the people that were hurt which they should be doing, but they also should be looking on fixing this problem so that society doesn't have this epidemic all the time and more women aren't going to be hurt.
Why is it relegated to powerful men? Because women were known for being chocolate lovers and sugar people and, you know, if there's a problem, let's eat type of thing. And it's not women that are these perpetrators. I'm sure there are some, but by and large, it's...
You don't know the ones that are. I have them in my practice, the CEOs and the politicians. You're not hearing about that yet, but it's up for adultery for women now. You know, it's higher than it's ever been. So we're not hearing about that, but that happens a lot too. You know,
well,
men haven't come forward about the women approaching them. You're not hearing that, but there are cases like that too, and I've had them.
Yeah, obviously, if you're talking about heterosexuals, there's a woman cheating for every man that's cheating, pretty much.
Right.
True. And I don't know what the risk taking says about me and Maria, since both of us drive Harley Davidsons. Maybe we have to, you know, take a look at things.
That's sublimated risk taking. That's the appropriate risk taking. You see. There's nothing wrong with thrill seeking as long as it's appropriate. These are inappropriate thrill seekers. That's the difference.
That's an interesting distinction, huh, Michael? So
yes.
Because ours is legal.
Yes.
It's consenting adults.
So, Dr. Bonnie, do you think that this connection or the thing that you're talking about that pushes people to do this, that it's strictly pharmacological, that it can be cured through diet and you know, other means that are not therapeutic?
Yes, and I've seen it. I've seen it with my father. I mean, you need psychotherapy also. I mean, I do psychotherapy on these people, but my point is, if I just did psychotherapy on these people, it would last about 2 years, and then they would be fine for about approximately 2 years. You know, then after 2 years, they go off the diet, because they need the support. They go off the supplements. They don't exercise, which they still need to do. And so just the psychotherapy alone or just doing it on their own won't help. They have to continue for the rest of their life this diet where their blood sugar is balanced. So that means no sugar, because the sugar exacerbates the inappropriate behavior and it makes the brain do weird things on these particular people. The supplement, there's a couple of supplements. I don't want anyone to take these without a doctor's, orders, but that we're using lithium orotate. It's not the lithium for bipolar. It's a different, it's an amino acid, a slight form of regular lithium. Because these people that are sex addicts and people that act this way, they are so stressed out that the lithium is lower than in an average person. Because when you get stressed, you lose lithium. So this lithium orotate that we give people twice a day, it's been helping them get clarity. It's helping their judgment. It's making them focus better, and then they can make better decisions. So even if they're tempted, they're not going to act on it. So this, along with the diet, and this is for the rest of their life, and they cannot have sugar or alcohol. If they do, which is sometimes people do after 2 years, like this guy that I mentioned to you, they go all the way back. It's like being a little pregnant. You know, you can't have a little sugar, a little alcohol, and you have to exercise, you have to do psychotherapy, and you have to take supplements to help with the OCD. Because the OCD is when you have an obsessive compulsive moment, and all of a sudden you have to just do that. And, you know, I got that actual from my father, because I said to him, you know, I was working on my patients, and I said, Dad, you know, people coming back after 2 years. He says, yes. Because it's what happened to me. He said, the obsessive compulsive component. He said, I would be sitting in the living room with your mother and even you and your brother, and I would have to call this person right in front of your mother. And your mother didn't know I was calling. She didn't know who I was calling. He said, but it's like an obsessive compulsive, you're not in control of your brain, and that's what I kept telling the doctors, that you can't just do psychotherapy and sit with me and expect me to just talk to myself and say, okay, I'm not going to do this. So we give people another supplement, and again, I don't want anyone taking this without checking with their doctor, NAC, which is a supplement that helps compulsion. It also helps mucus and things like that if you have a cold and things like that. but it helps the compulsion. So between, and again, the doctor measures all this depending upon blood tests that we do on these people. And then we see what's lacking. We also look at their dopamine, which is how you feel. Dopamine is a chemical, brain chemical, that makes you feel happy, in love, and calm, and at peace with yourself. And serotonin, which affects mood. Now, everyone that we have picked and everyone that we have worked with and we have done studies with, they all had an imbalance of serotonin and dopamine. None of them were balanced with dopamine and serotonin. And it has to be balanced in the brain for people to handle behavior appropriately. So this is why I call it the biochemical craving for connection. And this is why I call it a disease that needs to be stamped out. It's an epidemic now. It's hurt so many people. I mean, I can attest because my father for 25 years cheated and the next 25 he didn't. And I'm so proud of him that he left that legacy. And he, you know, he helped me write the book, Adultery, the Forgivable Sin. And he said, one thing before I die, I want to make sure that in some way I let people know it's a disease and it can be cured and treated, but it can't be done by just psychotherapy or hoping for the best or talking to yourself. Going to a treatment center after 30, 40 days, he comes back. It's the same thing, he said, because you haven't done all the other pieces that help the brain to operate correctly.
Can talk about your cheating predictor cheat sheet?
Oh, yes, the cheat sheet that we have.
Because that's something I think that is a good tool for folks to hear.
Yes, the cheat sheet is something that, you know, you look and see, okay, so how many times has my partner been away? And this is good for politicians because a lot of the, sometimes the women in my practice are the wives that start to cheat because the politicians are away all the time. So that's one part of it. Another is if your family has cheated, you know, if you're a child from an adulterer. Another is if you don't have a good physical relationship or an emotional relationship, you know, with your partner, and you feel very empty and lonely. Also, a decade birthday can do it, where you start to feel old and you want to make yourself look young. A lot of times, men will go out with younger women, have an affair, or women will go out with younger men and have an affair because they're having a decade birthday and they want to look better and they want to look younger and feel younger with the energy of a younger person. So these are some of the, you know, cheat sheet that I have. These are some of the components. I also wanted to maybe mention, if you guys are interested, and how do you hold that line if you are tempted? And what happens if your partner is actually helping you to have an affair and they don't even realize it? So
by pushing
one
you away.
Tempted. Sorry.
Well, let me just say before you get into that, Dr. Bonnie, okay. Let me just say that no sugar, that's really tough. As a diabetic, I look now. Yeah. For, you know, to stay away from sugar. And it's hard. There are damn few things in the world that don't have sugar in them. You know, it's just amazing to me some of the things they put sugar in.
Yeah.
And let me also ask you, as a diabetic, natural sugar isn't good for me either. Is that true in this case too? You shouldn't eat corn, you shouldn't eat watermelon, you shouldn't eat things like
carrots.
That?
Well, our doctor said, you know, according to this, I don't know, and you're right, because watermelon is supposedly high in sugar. He thinks watermelon is okay, you know, if you're hypoglycemic or if you're diabetic, because he said it has some properties in it that are good for you. But corn and bread has so much sugar, it's unbelievable. People don't realize it. But, yeah, they have to stay away from anything like bread, corn. Orange juice, which is really high, mango, bananas, those things are really high in sugar. And we found that it does something, you know, to behavior. That's the thing. And the blood sugar, see, blood sugar fluctuations come from a lot of stress. And most people are under a lot of stress. So the blood sugar can be balanced by certain foods, like a protein and a carb, together. So in other words, a turkey with a sweet potato. But not a turkey by itself and not a sweet potato by itself, because those two things don't, you know, make the blood sugar balance. Like, for instance, chickpeas and sweet potatoes. Those two things are really good to balance blood sugar. So most people, as you know, politicians, people in Hollywood, I mean, those people, like I know Matt Lauer, I mean, they're not eating, and Charlie Rose can't be eating normal. I mean, their schedules were not normal, right? They begin at 4:30 in the morning or 5 in the morning. They're not having the normal schedule and the normal foods. And so everything adds up to the brain chemicals acting bizarre. And then you have inappropriate behavior. But this is a disease. And we know, my father, as I mentioned, had a candy draw. I mean, he was, that's all he ever did is have sugar. And he had no idea what it was doing to him. But it gives you the adrenaline rush that people need that are very stressed, that have stress loss and separation. It gives you that adrenaline rush just like coffee does. And we take people off coffee also because it's a false high and a false adrenaline rush, just like an affair would be.
You are taking all the fun out of life.
Yeah. What's left? Right, I know. No coffee, no sugar, no alcohol.
Yeah.
I know.
That sounds terrible. Well,
you're right, but that's why people have to be so motivated because, you know, and the way they're motivated, I mean, I have people that come back to me after 2 years because they're doing it again. You know why? Because you're right, it's so hard to stay off these things. But then I tell people, okay, do you want to have a quality of life? I mean, or do you want, and my patients will say to me, I couldn't live with myself after a while. I hated myself. So
yeah,
you know what? Getting rid of sugar was nothing compared to the, you know, how guilty I felt about what I was doing to my family. And not only that, you know, the shame, you could see the shame that Charlie Rose felt and Matt Lauer felt. I mean, you could hear it in the things that they said. There's such shame involved. It's like the same shame that was involved in alcoholism when nobody really understood it. I just hope that in some way I can make a difference to these Me Too people. I feel terrible for all of them. But I know if we just stop at people, you know, coming forward but not doing anything about it, we're going to have the same problem for the next generation and the next generation after that.
I think part of the problem is that we're, especially women, we're socialized to be polite. And so when I had my husband's boss running his fingers across my bare shoulders at the Christmas party, and I was wiggling to get out of his arm's reach, I didn't know what to do. I'm not going to slap his face or throw a drink in him. And my husband saw it happening, and I was the bad guy in his eyes. And it's like, what are you supposed to do? This was his boss's boss. And, I, that's why some of these things happen. Obviously, you don't go to somebody's hotel room. You don't put yourself in harm's way in that regard. Right. But this was out in the open that this was happening to me.
That's a good point that you're making. And you're right, because we're very polite as women, and we don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, and we have tremendous empathy, right?
Right.
And I think in that case, I mean, I actually talk about that in the Adultery and Forgivable Sin book. It's one of the things about, you know, how to hold that line and also what to do if, you know, you think something's happening like that. One of the things that I do, and I've been somewhere where a woman will come on to my husband at our country club, and my husband will do this too. He puts his arm around me and gives me a kiss, you know, and so that woman gets it. And then right. I also, if for some reason he didn't see it at that moment, I actually do the same thing. I put my arm around him and I give him a kiss. So that's one of the things you could have done. I mean, it's easier in Monday morning quarterback, but if that was happening, you could just pull away and then just smile at your husband and give him a hug and give him a kiss. I mean, that's the message that you're giving to that other person without making a scene, especially if it's your husband's boss. I mean, you do have to be very careful. I had somebody, it was my boss. I wasn't married at the time, but he walked me home, and he was my boss, and then he said to me, can I kiss you? And I said, listen, I said, you know, I find you very attractive. I wanted to say that even though he wasn't attractive, because I didn't know he's my boss, so I didn't want to insult him. Because a lot of times they feel rejected, you know, and if that was like, that's what everyone was worried about with Harvey Weinstein. They would worry that they wouldn't have a film that they were working on.
Or a career.
Right. So that's why I said, I find you very attractive. You are my boss. I would really, really appreciate if you could respect my boundaries and just keep it like it is, because I think we get along great this way, and I think it would be more complicated. And he said, okay, thank you, fine. You know, but I gave him the boundary, but of course he respected it. Now, in Harvey Weinstein's case, he wasn't respecting the boundaries. And it's true, because women, anyone would be afraid of losing your job or in the middle of a movie. And from what I hear, he possibly might have been revengeful, and he would have spited them. And so it's a very hard call. You do your very best, but like you said, we don't go up to someone's hotel room.
Well, okay. I think another problem that we have now that you brought it up, Maria, is that there's an assumption in our society, maybe in all societies, that women are in control of sex. That, you know, whether there's a sexual encounter or not, really depends on women and not on men. You know, I think we have that assumption that you know, women can always say no, or women can, you know, they're really in control of the situation. And obviously, when there's that big power differential, that's not the case.
Right. Right.
Well, that's
and we're talking about,
because, you know, you with a boundary, the thing with a boundary, like I said, I don't know what I would have done if my boss, you know, wanted to kiss me, but this was, of course, outside my building. I would never let him come up to my apartment. And if I did, I would unfortunately be giving him a mixed message. And I think women are naive when it's their boss, because you can't, and you're in denial. You can't imagine that Harvey Weinstein or Matt Lauer, if you're the intern, or President Clinton, you know, you can't imagine that somebody would do that, because you are in denial. You're looking up to this person as a mentor, or even some of the, you know, the athletes that have done things to women. So you really can't be naive. You have to actually create a boundary when you're in a place that you can. That's why I always tell people.
But
like,
speaking
on a first
date, Dr. Bonnie, yeah. You've got some great boundaries to give our listeners about holiday parties or even socializing. Do you mind going over those?
Right.
Because they're somewhat common sense, but they're actually somewhat unique, I think, too.
Well, if you're the one who feels tempted, okay, ask yourself what you see in the other person that you can't have or get from your mate. And then ask your mate whether he or she would and could meet the needs that you think you can get from someone else. Now, if you're having an attraction to somebody and it's purely physical, try to imagine the person at your office 10 years older and 20 pounds heavier.
And also, isn't that great, Michael?
Yeah, that always helps. Yeah. That helps, because then you can say, okay, now I'm not going to be interested in that person. And then make a list of the person's annoying habits, the one that you're attracted to. Biting nails, smoking. And look at this negative list 3 times a day. And then draw up a list of the things you love about your mate. And look at this positive list 3 times a day. Tell your mate what's on this love list and encourage more of the same. And one of the things, Maria, that I say is, remember, meeting encourages cheating. If you're trying to fight an attraction to someone, or you don't want it to develop one, avoid the following. Don't go on a pub crawl with the gang unless you bring your spouse. And this is very important. That's a clear message if you bring your spouse. Okay? And alcohol lowers inhibitions. So don't have alcohol around a person that you're attracted to. Don't lunch alone with this person. Invite other people along. Don't be the last to leave a party or a business dinner with this person that you're attracted to, and do not offer them a ride home. Talk positively to this person about your spouse. Complaints don't count. You're not allowed to say anything bad about your spouse to this person, and including talking about your sex lives. Invite your partner along to the parties, to the Christmas parties or any other business functions, if you go like on a weekend or an overnight and conventions. This is the best way, you know, so create a boundary so you don't overindulge with this person. Christmas parties, outings, invite your partner. And very important that when you do have a party, introduce this person to your partner. Now, if you have a partner, and here's where we have a lot of problems. Some of the reasons people cheat, as I hear this all the time, my patient will say, oh, I don't want to go to any business thing. It's going to be boring. Let him or her go themselves. But, you know, it's very important that even if you don't want to go, you don't say you don't want to go. You don't sulk and that you don't want to go and stay at home and then say, oh, well, you know, it's not part of my business. It's my partner's. Make it part of yours, too. Keep up with your mate's business and other interests. And also, if your partner is bringing up a name of the opposite sex a lot, find out more about that. Ask questions. Are you attracted to that person? Is there anything that I'm not doing that you want me to do? Are you feeling lonely? And ask about the physical relationship that you have with your partner. Ask your partner if they're satisfied and happy. Are you having a physical relationship often enough? And plan frequent outings without the kids. Activities that you know the other person likes. And communicate. Like if you're a politician, communicate meaningfully when you're apart. Maybe do FaceTime, Skype, little notes to your partner before you leave. And don't use just phone calls and never just text. Texting is the most unromantic thing that anyone can do, and it's a cop-out, as far as I'm concerned, to romance. And it actually is a romance wrecker. So talk at least 10 minutes a day if you're away from each other. If you're going to be on the road, tuck a tape of a voice or favorite book or poem into their suitcase. And make sure your mate has a current flattering picture of you for the office and some fun snapshots. If you're hearing more than you care about than somebody else, like a colleague, also invite them along so you can check out your competition. And when you do meet potential rivals, this is what I was talking to you about, Maria. When you do meet potential rivals, establish your turf. Dress up, be affectionate with your partner, put your arm around your partner's neck. Make some inside jokes or refer to sometimes you've shared together so that other person gets the message that this person is yours.
That almost sounds like caveman woman like, but I'm sure it makes a lot of sense to you, Michael.
Well, you know, one thing that you said that really struck me, Dr. Bonnie, is I started a business in my early 30s where I had to deal with young women a lot of times. And there were a lot of times when we would have lunches and, you know, late night meetings and stuff. And I always wanted to make women feel comfortable with me because that was good for business, you know, to establish a relationship right off the bat where she felt comfortable. And that was a technique that I always used, talking about my wife and kids, because I noticed that put women at ease right away. Like, this guy's not interested in hitting on me. Uh-huh. If he was, he wouldn't be telling me how wonderful his wife is and how much he loves his kids. So yeah. I really used it as like a technique because I felt that, you know, once they were comfortable with me, it was easier for them to do business with me.
Yeah, and that's so true, because then right away you set the boundary. That's I'm so happy to hear that, because that's very rare. People don't do that. I mean, they just don't think about it. You know, they don't even know that it's a technique. But that's wonderful that you did that. It sets the stage right away. It makes people comfortable. Then they feel they can look at you as a business, you know, and not anything else, and they're going to hit on them or anything.
Right.
And it
right, that was a
them.
Problem, and that was a problem in politics when you went out, you know, because there was so much of that, you know, and I was a political consultant that, you know, right away they were like, yeah, this guy's here to do business. He's not here to flirt with me. He's not here, you know, I found it very useful. And I also, you know, another useful technique I used was I got involved in their lives. One of the things that we did in my company, we did direct mail. So, you know, when they would have a child, we would do their birth announcements for free. Or if they were going to get married, we would offer to do their wedding invitations. I knew who the best technique that I've ever used in selling to women is I remember their children's names. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, it's the best thing you can do. If you walk in and you say, how's Susie, how's Johnny, how's Peter, how's, you know, you really connect immediately with them.
No wonder you were a success, Michael.
I was.
And my dad would never take his staff out to eat without my mother present. If she was unavailable, he would give them the credit card and said, take yourselves to lunch and, you know, I'll meet you back at the office when you're finished.
That is fabulous. That is so fabulous what you both said. Yes. Yes, that's a clear message.
Right. And it's pretty simple when you think about it. it just keeps it easy, right? You don't have to worry about who's going to think what or who's going to see you with whom and what are they going to think and all of that stuff. You stop that all at the pass.
That's exactly right. You set the boundary up first. And that's what I'm trying to say also about these partners. You know, you're setting the boundary the opposite of what you want when you say to your husband, oh, you know, I don't really want to go to the Christmas party. It's boring. Or the husband saying to the wife, you're already, you know, because people that commit adultery, they want attention. They're not getting enough attention at home in their mind. That doesn't mean that their partner's not giving them enough attention. It's just from their perspective, which sometimes could be narcissistic or unrealistic, but you're giving it to that person. You know, I mean, I have cases where, you know, the woman became a widower. She, you know, her husband died, and they were all friends, the four of them. So now they feel sorry for this woman, so they take her on a cruise, the three of them. And then what happens is they end up having an affair with my patient, the wife, the odd man out. I mean, because, you know, you start with good intentions that you want to help somebody, but then there's no boundary set. Because the woman, you know, my patient said, oh, I'll go to bed early that night. I don't feel like staying up and, you know, let them stay up together and dance. You know, it's too much trust. You shouldn't trust somebody like that. Say, okay, you can dance with my husband, you know, for four nights while we're on a cruise. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, so the woman has to, or the man is at the opposite too. We can't be naive. It's just like going to a hotel room when Harvey Weinstein wants to talk to you. You cannot be naive. You have to be alert. Just like we're alert with the terrorists, we're very vigilant. You have to do the same thing.
Well, interestingly enough, because I've been single for 12 years and I travel and live in a world of married couples, and I am super sensitive to not ever present any kind of threat to the wife by standing next to her, by speaking more to her than to her husband, by, you know, not accepting those kind of, oh, no, that's okay. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Because I don't want to ever have there to be even a hint of, what would you say, the threat of that? Because that's not worth it. She's my friend. He's her husband. That's my boundaries.
Exactly. Well, you know what?
You know, it's true what you just said. It's like when my father, you know, learned, because the next 25 years he did not cheat. The first 25 he did. And he would say to me, when I go to a diner and there's a very attractive waitress, I look down. I don't talk to the waitress. I let your mother order and I look down. He says, I am trying very hard to let your mother know that I love her, and I'm doing everything I can to make up for my crazy behavior the first 25 years, and I'm low-keying it. I'm downplaying. If someone's attractive, I just, you know, act like, you know, I'm not even saying hello, because my father was a very friendly person, and sometimes it's misconstrued when he's friendly. So he tried not to be friendly to any women after that. He just really, I mean, sometimes people would think he was rude. But he said, I'd rather people think I'm rude, because, you know, I'm a friendly guy. I do not want to hurt you.
Right. Your mother or any hesitation
about his
intentions.
And so, you see what
intentions.
I mean? So you have to kind of overcorrect. That's what we're talking about.
Right.
Well, you know, in your case, Maria, that may be something you could do. But you look at somebody like me, and this is easy for me because I'm a man, that, you know, there's a, I wouldn't call it a flirtation, but I'm in the business of making people like me. So I'm very effusive. And that must be hard for a woman to draw that, you know, because what do we call women that you know, put up a have a strict line? Don't we call those women bitches? Don't we call those women, you know, right? Don't we say, oh, she's such a bitch, you know? She's never friendly. You can't joke with her. You can't, you know. So it must be a very fine line that women have to walk. And I would think that would be very hard.
We have to overcorrect, like my father did, where he, you know, could not be friendly. And women have to be more businesslike, especially
if they're attractive. Back in the day, and Dr. Bonnie, I know you can relate to this, when I was the only woman in the room, because radio is very male-dominated, you had to be one of the boys, too, so you didn't look like a prude and you didn't have a sense of humor because it's just a joke, you know. And I was going to laugh along with the rest of them because that was my career too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, and that's the Weinstein.
You know, in Wall Street, a lot of the women that I see or I talk to from Wall Street, you know, they have to do that to keep their jobs. I mean, they don't do anything they're not supposed to do, but they can't not do some of the things that you said, because, you know, they would probably lose their jobs or they would be out of favor. So that's that thin line that you walk, where you don't want to do something that you don't believe in, but you're also trying to be one of the crowd, one of the boys.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I certainly can see in the Weinstein case, for example, he was so powerful in his little world, so powerful, that I could see why it's taken women so long to come forward on this stuff. Because I'm sure he ruined a lot of careers, or at least potentially could have.
Well, I don't know if you've read Selma Hayek's statement.
Yeah, I did. I read it.
Wow. That was something. And that was about her movie Frida, and all the things that he did to make it, one, not possible, and two, a failure, including the nude love scene that he had her do with another woman actress, because that was his way of exacting revenge on her, which had nothing to do, although Frida was bisexual, but nevertheless, I just felt for her, because she talked about on how many levels he tried to get at her when she wouldn't accept his advances.
Well, the thing that got me about reading that, Maria, was all the hurt that came out of it. I mean, you could just sense it. This was a woman that was terribly hurt by all this, and you could tell that every word of it was true and came from her soul, because she just, I mean, that's the thing that got me, is that she was just so hurt by all this stuff that had happened to her. And,
he could make or break you. You know, that was the problem. Like you said, he had so much power. And then look at the pain that she went through. I think she was in the middle of the movie.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And
well, that gets back to the whole empathy.
You know, it's holding people hostage and blackmailing them.
Yeah.
Well, before we let you go.
That's unforgivable, really.
Before we let you go, Dr. Bonnie, tell people how they can get your book or get in touch with you or get on your website or whatever. Do you have a website?
Yes. Yes. Thank you for asking.
www,
and it's doctor spelled out doctor Bonnie, bonnie.com. www.drbonniespelledout.com. And if people want to call me, last time Maria had some people call just to ask questions. I'm happy to ask questions or talk to them.
Because Dr. Bonnie does telephone consultations, too, so you don't have to be in the Northeast to take advantage of her amazing prowess.
Yes, I do this all over the world. So the number for that is 212-606-3787, 212-606-3787. And I also have the Makeup Don't Break Up book is for singles and couples. And then Adultery, the Forgivable Sin, which became a movie. And then the documentary I did for A&E Entertainment, Discovery Health, and Oprah called Unfaithful, that you can get on YouTube. And it talks about the biochemical craving for connection, the whole theory that I developed, and how I see it as a disease. And I hope someday soon we can help these men so new men will not have to have the same problem that all these men that we're talking about have, to hurt more women, and then, you know, similar to what happened to me, so we can have a good ending like what happened to my whole family.
Well, Dr. Bonnie, thanks so much for being on the show. We appreciate this. This is so interesting. And, you know, it's funny, again, as a diabetic, I'll tell you that I have a friend that was a clinical nutritionist, and she used to say to me that doctors in general don't know a whole lot about nutrition. And I thought that was just a ridiculous thing until I started to get treated for diabetes and realized that a lot of them, that nutrition is a relatively new thing for a lot of doctors to look into. So it is important, and the connection and how it affects our lives is really important. So thanks for being on the show and talking about it. And we'll have to have you back again soon, because this is a conversation that needs to go on and on,
unfold.
I think.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Bonnie. Happy holidays to you.
Yeah, happy holidays.
And happy New Year.
Thank you. You too. Happy holidays and happy New Year. And once again, it's wonderful doing the show with you guys. I really love working with you guys.
Thank you so
much. Same here. All right.
So, Michael, we wanted to share with our listeners, but first, let's talk about what happened in Alabama, and they're saying it's due to the preponderance of black women voting for Doug Jones, as they've done time and again, and that they want to get their recognition and some of the power that is due them for their activism.
Well, again, Maria, I think that we're overselling it as Democrats. You know, this is my perspective. I think that yes, it's amazing. 25 years we haven't had a Democrat elected in Alabama. But let's not forget that we're talking about 1% here. That you know, it wasn't an overwhelming victory, and we should be cautious about it, I think. But yes, I think that black women showed up and they made the difference. And, you know, maybe this is Trump's legacy. Maybe Trump, you know, gets us out there, makes us active. He's not only invigorated a very, you know, let's call him ultra conservative right wing. He's also energizing a left wing as well. So maybe that is his legacy. And just to bring it around to Dr. Bonnie, again, will we see this? Will we see historians write that this became an issue with him, and then it became an issue with America? You know, maybe his legacy is that he's brought this stuff out, and now women feel that they need to stand up and voice what's happened to them. I mean, I'm just amazed that you're hearing things like Katie Couric saying Matt Lauer pinched me on the ass for years. I mean, who would have suspected that, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. But Alabama, yeah, I think the tide is turning, but it's not turning because people are changing their minds. And that's what we're talking about. It's changing because people that were dormant are coming out and in large numbers. I think that happened in Virginia too. And I said on the show that you know, they really won a resounding victory at the local level and state level, but they also knocked on 2 million doors that they hadn't knocked on before. So I think
that's part of it, is the activism, the get out the vote, you know, the precinct pollings and et cetera. But they seem to have it figured out, which is going to benefit you all moving forward. And if the Republicans don't go to grassroots, because I'm feeling disenfranchised myself, because I don't see myself in the party. And it's all I can do to not change. We have California, not independent, which we do have, but we have something called decline to state. And I'm edging towards that. But then I don't get to vote in the primaries, and I want to vote in the primaries because that's what determines what goes on in November.
Well, and I think that the problem is that both parties are out of touch. And you know, that's what happened to the Democrats. Look, nobody in the Democratic Party thought that Donald Trump was going to get elected. We just thought it was the most ridiculous thing, you know, that you could imagine. And I mean, it just showed how out of touch we were. Mm-hmm. And so I think both parties, I don't know that an independent party is the answer to that, because, you know, when you look at world politics, I've often said that I think the Italians are the greatest democracy in the world because they let everybody run the government for a week. You know, and you know what? They have so many parties and so many, you know, and so much turnover. You know, I don't know that that's a healthy thing. I think that you can have a two-party system, but they've certainly gotten out of whack. They've certainly and I would, you know, I know this won't make me popular, but I would say that the Democratic Party has been influenced by the liberal fringe as much as the Republican Party has been affected by the conservative fringe, the ultra conservative fringe.
I would agree with you 1,000%.
Yeah. Well, let me just say, next week, to everybody, since we're running out of time here, we're going to do a whole hour of our favorite Christmas music, because our show would be on Christmas Eve, and we're going to be with our families, and we hope that everybody else is with their families as well. And the following week, We're going to pick a great show to rerun. Maybe we'll do Carol Schwartz again for those people that didn't hear it. We had her on the show last week. She was on the front page of the style section in the Washington Post this week. She's a very interesting character, a Republican who survived in a Democratic world. We want to wish, and I'll give Maria a chance to talk here, but I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. I want to wish everybody happy holidays. And I want to say as a Christian that, you know, I believe in what Marshall McLuhan said, that the medium in the is the message. And for me, the message of Christmas is that the birth of the Savior, in my case, is the message. And the message is that our salvation lies in our children. So make sure you hug each and every one that you can, every child you come across, and let's try to make a better world to give them.
You know, Maria? Along those lines, though, Michael, I have a neighbor who has a 1- and 3-year-old daughter, and it's all I can do not to pick them up and hold them. But I don't know them that well, and I don't want any of my actions or behaviors to be misconstrued, because it's not just about men harassing women. There's, you know, there's this whole new sensitivity out there, and I have to admit that I'm erring on the side of caution. So I even wanted to touch their little tummies because they were talking about having eaten something. And then I thought, no, that's touch, and I don't, you know, it's in front of their mother. They have their clothes on. I have my clothes on. It's in the light of day. But I'm being super sensitive because of the climate that's going on. And I think we should just remind people of that, too.
Well, I think that's sad. And I think it's true. I'll tell you that I found a little girl in a shopping mall 4 or 5 years ago came out hysterical in front of me, and I took her by the hand. She told me that she couldn't find her mommy, and I took her by the hand, and I was walking her over to the information booth when her mother came out of the store, and that's the first thing that flashed into my head, Maria, is I hope she understands that I'm not trying to take this child. Of course, the mother did understand that. She came out and she said, oh, thank God, there you are. She hugged her. She hugged me. She said, thank you. You know, but that's the first thing that flashed in my mind. And how sad is that? That's unfortunate. But I think that maybe I overspoke. Maybe you shouldn't hug all the children, but certainly make sure that you let them know how important they are, because they are the future, and they are, you know, this is what Christmas is about
and the holidays too, is that,
and the holidays too,
to show our gratitude for those that we love, and to let those that we love know that we love them. Because how many times do people say, I wish I had said, I wish I had done,
Right.
So, yeah, thank you for that. Right. So we're saying farewell until 2018.
Yes. So have a great new year. And here's a preview. We're going to leave you with one of the songs that we're probably playing next week. This is a song by Train. So we'll everybody have a happy holiday, and we'll see you in 2018.
Yes.
Ho, ho, ho. Shake up the happiness, wake up the happiness, shake up the happiness, it's Christmas time. There's a story that I was told, and I wanna tell the world before I get too old, and don't remember it, so let's December it, and reassemble it. Give the people their right to vote.